But they were not on alert. If you watch that video and you're honest with, they were leaning, they were looking at the ground. Two officers were preoccupied disassembling a magnetometer. They should not be disassembled until the event is over. There was only one officer on the bottom left side of the screen. He was the only one who picked up on the guy running towards them. Everyone else was oblivious. Eight guys in one spot, only one guy is paying attention to what's going on at that moment. And now their guard's down and they're relaxed. And that shouldn't be.
They were joined by Dean Golemis, former police detective, security expert, and founder of Global Security and Investigative Services. With decades of experience in law enforcement, Dean has handled everything from major investigations to high-level security operations. In this conversation, we break down the recent White House Correspondents' Dinner shooting, what likely went wrong, how security failures can happen even at the highest levels, and what can be done to provide better protection in the future. This is Bay Renovators, and I'm your host, Steve Ispas. Dean, welcome to Bay Renovators.
Thanks for having me, Steve. Appreciate it.
Great to have you here from Florida. Currently, I know you're out of New York. Now, I want to start, you know, it's been the third assassination attempt on the president. And I want to talk a little bit about what happened. You've been involved in this security business and you can give us more insight. I've just watched the video that was released just yesterday, this newest, latest video with this guy going through the gym and then just barging into the security area. It's just kind of nerve-wracking to see this, how someone with guns can run through like that. Give us a bit of sense of what you saw from your angle and, you know, what do you think happened with this whole security flaw or in some way a failure?
I'd like to say that when the actual incident unfolded, I think the Secret Service did a commendable job as far as stopping the threat, evacuating the president. You saw Secret Service agents shielding the president with their body, jumping up on stage. And, you know, we got to remember, these agents are family men. They have families and wives at home, and they're willing to die for the president of the United States for their mission. And that's super commendable. So I don't want any part of this to bash the individual agents that work that day. They're dedicated professionals. But I think whenever an incident like this happens, what we need to do is definitely review and see where they could have done better, right? We always want to do better because the gunman did get past the first line of defense. And, you know, we want that not to happen, right? He did get a gun into the hotel. The video is very interesting. The video shows us a lot of interesting things. He was allowed to walk around the building. I mean, he didn't raise any suspicions going into the gym on two occasions, not in any gym clothes or gym attire at all. So it's clear that he wasn't there to work out. He stayed in the gym.
Why do you think he even went to the gym?
I think he was scoping out. He was scoping out the layout of the hotel. I'd like to know what's at the other end of that gym. There seemed to be a bank of windows. You know, he could have been there observing Secret Service agents in action, taking notes, mental notes. Again, I don't know exactly where that gym falls in the layout of the building, but I believe he was walking the hallways and he was just getting a feel for how the building was laid out and probably doing a little recon to see where Secret Service agents may be posted and just to try to find his best avenue to access the event.
Now, what do you think happened? So there's a dog that seemed like almost got him, right? But then somehow he just comes in with a gun. How is that happening?
Well, now, like, of course, hindsight's 20/20, right? We see that the one Secret Service uniformed Secret Service agent, the dog looked like the dog alerted on the gunman. And I imagine that that's a bomb dog. I'm speculating here. And a bomb dog's trained to detect explosives, gunpowder. Now we know that that gentleman had two guns on him, and shotgun shells and pistol rounds contain gunpowder, which is an explosive. So I believe that dog smelled the gunpowder and was interested. And it appears that the agent may have, like, you know, kind of not believed the dog or discounted the dog. Because if you see the dogs pulling towards him, when he walks straight across the hallway into that room on the right, you can see the gunman and the dogs right behind him pulling, and the officer pulls the dog back on the lead and walks away. And I think that made the gunman nervous, and it was kind of like maybe a now or never moment. Uh-oh. You know, the gunman knows he has a gun and gunpowder on him. Uh-oh, this dog's made me. My window's closing here. Let me make a mad dash from the thing and try to get somebody.
That's actually a really good point. It could have been worse. Yeah, maybe he rushed and that he got caught easier. Otherwise, it could have been worse. That
Right.
that's a
Maybe the
very good
dog
point.
spooked him and maybe he had some other plan, and the dog spooked him. He said, uh-oh, that dog could turn back around in 1 second, and maybe the agent is not going to ignore him, you
Now,
know.
the element of surprise is always a factor in these things because no one expects someone like that to run through, but how would he have the gun to begin with in the hallway so close to the security door there?
If you watch the video that was released by the FBI, you see him wearing a long trench coat, and you could see his right arm is stiff along his leg. And when I was a cop in the Bronx, that was something we were taught when we were out doing an anti-crime patrol or an undercover patrol. You know, people have these certain giveaways that let you know they have a gun. As soon, I mean, actually, I know I'm looking at a video of a gunman. But if I would have seen him walking, if I was a Secret Service agent and I was monitoring the hallway and I saw that gentleman walking by with a trench coat on and his right arm stiff along his side like that, every instinct I would have would be telling me he has a gun on him. And that was a giveaway. So when he was walking down that hallway with that trench coat on, I guarantee you he had a long gun on him underneath. And he was holding it. That's why his arm was stiff.
So does it come to a security failure for the hotel, not for the event itself, but the hotel itself to have the gun come in the hotel, or how did he?
No, it's not standard practice for any hotel to have metal detectors or search bags. This was a failure of the Secret Service on some level, right? I mean, they should have. This is a very volatile environment we're living in right now. This is the third attempt on President Trump's life. The Secret Service should be on super high alert. There's no reason why guests shouldn't have been screened and had their luggage screened when they checked into the hotel in the days leading up to the event. And as you see in that video, they were already disassembling the magnetometers, the metal detectors. So if you really look at the group of officers, and again, I was a police officer for 20 years, and I respect the job that men and women in law enforcement do, but they were not on alert. If you watch that video and you're honest with yourself, and if the Secret Service is going to be honest with itself, those were guys who had their defenses and their guard down. They were leaning, they were looking at the ground. Two officers were preoccupied disassembling a magnetometer. They should not be disassembled until the event is over, over, and everyone's out of the building, and all the protectees are out of the building. The only officer there who there was only one officer on the bottom left side of the screen. He was the only one who picked up on the guy running towards them. Everyone else was oblivious. Everybody else, and that's, you know, they gotta look at that. Who's supervising these guards where they're all congregated in one spot? Eight guys in one spot. Only one guy is paying attention to what's going on at that moment. And it's human nature, right? I don't want to really pick on these guys, but it's a boring job a lot of the times. The main part of the job, which is getting attendees in and screening them for weapons, is over because everybody's inside, and now their guard's down and they're relaxed, and that shouldn't be.
Now, give us a sense. Do we know, are all those security people there, are those Secret Service agents or they're just security?
I believe there are Secret Service agents and uniformed Secret Service police. So Secret Service has two divisions, right? They have a uniform division, which guards the White House grounds and facilities. And then they have the Secret Service agents, which are the executive protection people.
Would you think that this was in any way coordinated, this action?
I don't believe so. But it lends you to wonder, we're in a state of war right now. Is Iran watching? Let's look at the assassination attempts. A 20-year-old kid in Butler, Pennsylvania, got four or five shots off on President Trump from a rooftop that by all means any security expert would know should have been secured and was not. A hippie from Hawaii hid in a bush outside his golf course and almost shot him. And now this kid with no formal training, as far as we know, was able to just check into the hotel the event was at, rush the event, and get within 100 feet or 100 yards of the president. What if that was three or four terrorist cells, sleeper cells? We keep hearing that, all these terrorist watch list people were released into our country and we don't know where they are. Well, don't think the people that really want to do this country harm aren't paying attention to this. And with a little planning, imagine a professional hit squad going after the president. Rookies with no skill at all are getting darn close. Imagine a professionally planned and executed hit team. Scary, scary times and scary stuff.
Now, you actually had a very good point there. This guy rushed through, and then pretty much all the agents were after him. If there were two or three guys following him, like a
One
few.
agent stayed. If you watch what happened, all resources went to him. They had more than enough people to deal with one individual. 30 people ran to him, right? They were coming in the front doors, they were coming in, all going to him. And that's a cop's instinct, right? Every cop wants to be in on it. We want to get there, we want to help. That's our instinct and our nature. But when you're doing that kind of job, you have to be trained differently because what if there was a second guy running behind him 10 seconds later? He would have got past all of them. Only one guy stayed behind and had the fore. If you watch the video at the end, only one officer had the forethought to turn and return his attention to where the other attacker came from, where the gunman came from. Everybody else ran after the gunman. One guy turned and tried to hold down the corridor. Very, very, very telling. That guy should be, although it looks like he wasn't running towards the danger, he probably was the most attentive of everybody there because he realized, what if there's another attacker? Everyone's paying attention to that guy. They're going to run up on us, and our back's going to be to the corridor, and they're going to shoot all of us. So he should be commended for that action.
Now, of course, one could argue that if there was a group of them, if it was a whole hit squad, then they would raise more suspicion and they would be easier to detect. But depends, I guess, how well they organize. But that
One
is
guy checked
scary.
in with two guns, three knives, and no problem. How hard would it be for two more to check in? No one checked them. 20 people could have checked in. Nobody checked them.
So it's not standard procedure, I guess, in any way to check for metal detectors in a hotel, but even in this kind of special situation.
Well, it should have been. The Secret Service could have set up a detail there in the days leading up to it, maybe a day or two before, and checked guests coming in. Also, I'm sure that the Secret Service and the FBI have the ability to cross-reference registered guests, and you'll be able to see if, maybe somebody's on a terror watch list who registered as a guest. Maybe somebody has a criminal violent history. Why is this kid traveling from California all the way here? He's never been involved in politics before. Why is he checking in the day before the White House Correspondents' Dinner? And then they could check his posts. They can do all that. They can go look at his social media accounts and see what he's talking about. Because he was pretty, I think he was pretty much indoctrinated, right? He was radicalized from what everyone's saying. More and more, he was saying crazy, radical things to his family, and his family has told us that now. So, if somebody's red flagged, as why are they at? You look at all the guests that checked into that hotel, the Hilton. They're going to be reporters. This discount. They're supposed to be there. They're supposed to be there. They're supposed to be there. Boop. Who's this kid from California? He's a scientist. Let's look at his Facebook page. Let's look at his Instagram. Oh, wow. Look at all this crazy stuff he's saying. Red flag. Pay him a visit. That wasn't done, and that could be done. And that just goes to we need more resources. They're not funding DHS right now. It's madness. And I don't get into politics here, but the Democrats are trying to prove a point against the Republicans, and we have no winners here. We have a serious threat to the White House, and I mean, I see a lot of crazy stuff, but do we really want, no matter how bad you hate Donald Trump, do you want him killed? Really? That'd be terrible for the world, not just the United States. So
Yeah.
they got to just stop playing games and fund. These are things that you just can't play games with.
Now you did talk about indoctrination. How much of an effect do you think all the negative press that it's pretty much constant, or pretty much on both sides, how much does that have to do with it? And how do you feel that these people may feel like heroes, right? If they pull it something like that.
Think about the average person doesn't understand, right? The normal right-thinking person, the sane person, and I'm not saying that this guy's insane because that's insanity defense does not apply here. We can talk about that later. But a normal person who's has his head screwed on right is not going to listen to rhetoric from Chuck Schumer that Trump's a Nazi or whoever says it. They're going to say, ha, he's a Nazi. Okay, yeah, they're just trying to score some sound bites, right? But what these people that say these things, and again, both sides are saying stupid stuff. There are people that we just don't understand because we're not them. We're mentally weak in a mentally bad place at the moment. They're going to look at this stuff and go, oh my God, Hitler, he's Hitler. He's going to kill everyone. This is crazy. I got to stop him. And I'll be a hero. I stopped Hitler. How many people have talked about what if we would have killed Hitler, when he was born? Go back in time and you could change the course of the world. These people think, oh my God, I'm going to do a good thing. My congressman is saying that Trump is a Nazi. I mean, he must be a Nazi. He's a congressman. But just normal people aren't going to. They're not going to take this stuff literal, but there are people in the world who are susceptible. They're weak of mind. They're emotionally unstable. They're going through a troubled part of their life. And this can give them a sense of glorification. Their life, maybe they think their life has no meaning. Wow, I'm going to kill this horrible threat to humanity. And at least my life will mean something now. I'll go down as somebody important in history. And it encourages these nuts to come out. And it's happening three times against Donald Trump, first time in history that many attempts on one person.
Another point here that I think that's important is the fact that we have social media that whatever you're looking for, like if you have a trend that you're following, that's going to be amplified and encouraged. Like whatever you're scrolling on your social media that you look at is going to show you more and more and more. So if someone is leaning one way,
Right.
he's just going to get that message over and over again and more enforcing. So that's going
Right.
to play a role as well.
Of course, once you go on, I'm a little older, but my daughter got me onto Instagram, right? Looking at Instagram. And I liked a guy falling off a skateboard.
Yeah, you're going to
And he's
get it.
riding a skateboard. Every time I go to Instagram, guys are falling off skateboards, bicycles, this same thing with, unfortunately, with going to these more politically leaning sites. Once you go onto one and you like one thing on there, if you like one person calling the president a Nazi,
That's
I
all you're going to
imagine you're
get.
going to be inundated with people calling President Trump a Nazi. And it starts to mess with people's heads. I mean, it's a fact.
Now, let's talk a bit about this new ballroom, White House ballroom that's being built. It's supposed to be completely secure. Do you think that would solve this problem rather than securing a hotel, having the White House ballroom secured? Would that be easier, in your opinion?
100%. Well, it wouldn't solve all problems, right? I mean, the Secret Service still has to take an honest look at itself and look inward and say, where could we have done better? Because not every event is going to be at the ballroom, right? They're not going to build this ballroom and say, from now on, President Trump is only attending events at the ballroom. That's not the case. But for events like this that happen in Washington, D.C., by all means, I mean, the White House is the safest place probably in the country. Right? So you already have a secure perimeter. You already have restricted access. So yes, the ballroom's a great idea, and I think it should happen. And I think the only reason people are against the ballroom is for political reasons. No other reason.
Yeah, because with I mean, there's always going to be loopholes. There's going to be ways for people to get in somehow. But something like the hotel, even if the Secret Service has like a 2, 3 day deadline for people checking into whatever, but someone can be there for a week. They can check in a week earlier or 2 weeks earlier and keep stuff in their room.
But there's other ways that the Secret Service can identify guests at a hotel and who they are and who can be red flagged, who might be on the watch list, who's there's other ways. They can, the day of the event or the day before the event, they can see who's checked in, who's got reservations. That all can be found.
Now, you've been with the NYPD for what, 20 years? Tell us a bit about your work. What did you do with the NYPD and what do you do now?
I was a police officer with the NYPD for 5 years. And after 5 years, I got hired by the Rockland County Sheriff's Office, which is one county north of Manhattan. And I did 15 years there as a detective. 13 of those 15 were as a detective. Worked in the crime scene unit, worked on every major case in Rockland County for 13 years. Very interesting job, very rewarding job. And getting towards the end of my career, the last couple of years, I've always been a hustler. I've always tried to do other things and make, you know, I always wanted to own my own business and start my, I had a very entrepreneurial spirit. And I started a security company doing private investigations, and it kind of took off, and I got to 20 years, and I loved being a detective. I loved my job. I loved the department I worked for. It was a wonderful agency. And I had a chance to go out on my own and try to make this business into something. And we now operate in 5 states. It's a very successful business, and I'm very proud of it. And we do a lot of good things.
So you provide private security for events, for individuals, for whatever is needed.
We do event security. We do executive protection details. We do security at banks, schools, hospitals, government institutions, all manner of buildings and corporations that need security services. We also do assessments for private companies.
Now, tell us a bit about some of your interesting cases from before. I know there's something about a painting that that you were involved with. Tell us about that story.
A Norman Rockwell painting was auctioned off at Sotheby's when it was sent to a third party for shipping to the winning bidder in the auction. It was stolen from that facility. And the NYPD had been hired, you know, had been called to investigate, and the owner of the facility was going to be hit with a huge insurance hit. So they hired us because they felt the investigation wasn't going so well. And I was able to track that painting down and recover the painting for the owner. So that was something I was very proud of. It was a very interesting investigation that took me from New York almost to Israel. I actually thought the painting was in Israel, and I was getting ready to go to Israel, and I had gotten ahead of the painting. It was going to Israel, but still was in the United States, and I ended up recovering it in the town of Hubbard, Ohio, if you can believe that.
Wow.
But a super, super interesting case, a lot of twists and turns, and end of the day, a disgruntled employee with a gambling problem, you know, thought that he'd be able to make some quick money. So it was my first foray into the world of stolen art. You know, it's actually quite a big thing.
Now, tell us a bit, what is it that keeps you going in your profession? I mean, it's obviously it's dangerous. You know, there's a lot of potential for, you know, getting into trouble or being harmed. What is your motivation for what you did before and what you do now?
Well, I always had a sense of community service, right? I mean, that's why people become police officers. That's why people go into law enforcement. I wanted to help. I wanted to make things better, right? You know, foolish me, thinking one person's going to make a difference in the world. You realize soon that you're not going to make a difference, but you do the best you can. And the police profession, I feel very bad for young people today that go into the police professions because it's so maligned, right? But every day I was able to go to work and I was able to help somebody. I was able to, a super, super, super rewarding career. You're never going to be rich being a police officer, but it was very personally rewarding. And I think I got to impact a lot of people's lives in my career and in a good way. You know, even if you solved the case of a murder, the loved one, you know, they lost their loved one, but you gave them some closure and you figured out who did it. That's a very rewarding thing for someone to do. Someone's house was burglarized. They feel violated. You're able to catch the burglar, and maybe the young lady can sleep better the night after she finds out that the burglar's now in jail. And it was a very personally rewarding job. I mean, I saw some terrible things. I saw some wonderful things. I met some incredible people. And when you retire, I'm retired 13 years now, and I often think back, and I was talking to my ex-partner just the other day. And it's funny, all you recall is all the fun and the good stories and the cool things that you did.
Of
You
course.
remember all the bad stuff, the unfortunate things you saw. You kind of push that aside, you know? And I started my company, and I'm very, very proud of it. It's like a baby, right? You start a company. I don't know if you've ever owned your, I don't know, Steve, if you've ever had
I
your own
did
business.
actually, yes.
But you start it, and it's this delicate little thing, and you're worried it's going to break or you're going to collapse or you're big going to go out of business. And you grow it, and you get bigger, and you watch it. And now it starts to take on a life of its own. And I sit back and I see all the people that work for me and all the people that I employ and have a job because of something I made. And I try to take care of all my people as best I can. I think anybody who works for me will tell you that. And unfortunately, now the company's so big, I don't know everybody. My security guards, I mean, I don't know all of them. It's impossible. But my management team, and I'm very, very proud of that. Sometimes on a Friday, I'll watch in my office everyone we leave for the day and get in their cars. And I'm just super proud that I made something that can provide a living for these people. And I believe, more importantly than that, even, I think I provide a valuable, valuable service to my client. We're not a small company, but we're not a huge international giant. So all my clients can still call me on the phone 2 o'clock in the morning. Believe me, last night my phone rang at 3:45. And I answer and I get things done for my clients. And I make sure they're getting the kind of service they want and they're satisfied with the service, more importantly, and that they feel that they're getting a value for what they're paying us, you know?
Now, in conclusion, from outside, what do you see that needs to be improved with the Secret Service and with security in general, with the president and, not just him, but I guess other politicians too. There seems like there's been three cases, and I don't think people want to see a fourth. Well, maybe some do, but I don't think most want to see a fourth.
We need to have some kind of review board in the Secret Service, be it internally and external. I don't know what the best answer is on who should be doing the review. But it's very hard when you're an agency, public or private, to look inside. When something goes wrong, we have failures, right? I have failures in my company. We have a guard didn't do what he was supposed to do, an incident happened. What do? We do a corrective action plan, right? We go, we review, and we take an honest look. And we fall on our sword when we have to. We say, this is where we messed up, and this is what we're doing to make sure this doesn't happen again. X, Y, and Z. That was supposed to happen with Butler. I believe it maybe did, but I think we need to know what the reforms are. They need to look at what their pre-plan was, their advance. It's called an advance when they go there a couple of days before and they lay out the plan, the security plan. And they say, what can we do different? And I'm sure they're doing that. I'm sure they're doing that. But I don't know if the Secret Service is the right agency to review themselves. I don't know if another federal law enforcement agency like the FBI or a panel of retired Secret Service people get the best and the brightest that ever were, put them together in a room and say, what are we doing different? Because at the end of the day, technology changes rapidly. And the government doesn't always move as quickly as it should. Just the nature of the government, right? And we're at a level here where we can't afford mistakes. And they could have done better. Not the guards performing that day did great, but how's their training? If you watch that lobby, just watch the lobby. The guy ran through, I believe he was tackled not far from where off screen to the right. How many guys piled through the doors? Came in down the hallway, all ran to the bad guy. They didn't need 30 guys standing around the bad guy. All those guys that ran in the front door on the top right, they came in through that door, they left their post outside. Right.
Yes. I want to ask you because you mentioned that if someone has a trench coat and the right arm is stiff going down, that's like a red flag. I don't know if you remember the scene from The Godfather when the father's in the hospital and then Michael comes out and he's trying to defend him.
Benji has a gun.
And that's exactly what he's doing. He's telling these other guys, like, keep your hands straight, and just pull your collar up and then just stand there, And that made
There was
the
something else. There was something else that we should talk about, a shortcoming that just popped to mind. I know somebody who was at the White House Correspondent Dinner.
Yeah.
There were pre-parties. Every, like most big news outlets had a pre-party right outside the entrance to the ballroom door. There were separate rooms. Mm-hmm. And like ABC had one, and NBC had one, and CNN had one. Nobody attending those parties were subject to magnetometers or screening.
Wow.
So, like Leavitt, the press secretary,
yeah,
she was in attendance. Every secretary of every agency was at these parties.
Yes.
And they didn't, and no guest or attendee had to go through any metal detectors to get to these parties.
Wow.
So Leavitt was there, pregnant. What's her first name again? She was there. Nobody, all the guests, nobody went through a magnetometer. That's crazy.
Yeah. Dean, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate the insight and everything you're doing for security. That's very important. And we hope to talk to you next time.
I appreciate you having me, Steve. It was great talking to you.
Thank you. Thank you for watching another episode of Bay Area Innovators. If you enjoyed this episode and you know someone who should be on our show, please send us an email at sfbay@epochtimes.com. We would love to hear from you. Thank you, and see you next week.